Accession number 32064.
Alexander Campbell, Reel 2. So you came back to Belfast and had a bit of normal life. What happened next?
Then after that, we were posted to the North Africa. They were going to start the North Africa campaign, which happened in November 1942. And it's at that juncture one learned how uncommunicative the captain was, inasmuch that nobody seemed to know where we were going, what we were doing. And being at sea, there's no way you can tell anybody else, so whatever you're told then was confidential too. We eventually learned that we're heading off for the North African invasion, that we weren't going to be a participating destroyer. We were having to go and escort a supply ship coming up from Freetown. So we in the Venomous and a more modern destroyer, the Marlin, and a cruiser, his name escapes me, were to pick up the Hecla and escort it from Freetown up to Gibraltar, where it would be available to supply ships coming back and forward. And that turned out to be quite a night, in as much as the Hecla was sunk by torpedoes. There must have been half a dozen to eight torpedoes sunk into her, and of course we had the job then of going to pick up survivors. And of course the Hecla had been in Freetown so long, many of the people we picked up were wearing pyjamas. Well, normally at sea you never think about wearing pyjamas, but they had been so long that was it. Picked them up. So, and when we're doing that, the man had its stern blown off, so it couldn't move. It didn't sink, but it had no propellers, so we had to move around to try and protect the man, pick up survivors, and try and find the submarine that had done the damage. So that was a very arduous night, and things that stick in your mind is when you're within sight of survivors on a carry float, you threw a line to them to bring them in and get them in, and then suddenly from the bridge in an order, cut everything. You'd cut the ropes and they were left wondering, will you ever come back? Because they've got an acid reaction of a submarine, so you go chasing that to try and get. And the other problem was dropping depth charges didn't do the survivors in the water any good. That what it would do to their stomachs, I don't know. Arising out of that, the bosun contracted meningitis. By the time he got to Gibraltar some days, he died, actually.
Oh, very sad.
But we struggled through the night on that.
Can you tell me, what were you doing? What did you
personally? We were busy on the side, whatever we could, pulling people in. Get nets down the side, get them climbing up and helping them up, and throwing lines to the carry floats, anywhere we could get people in and get them into ship, end of story. So eventually, of course, it came the morning, we had very little fuel left, and they then made for Casablanca. It was never intended that any Brits would be at Casablanca, because the Americans had taken Casablanca. So we pulled in there, and the Americans were very good. They took all the survivors from us on board the ship, gave them some to eat, gave them some clothes. Then come the morning, we took them back again and steamed up to Gibraltar, some of whom didn't make it on the way, and we had to bury them at sea. It was sort of a salutary lesson. You realise you're putting peace on the hammock and putting them over the side.
Can you describe the processes, the sort of the tradition for burial at sea for me?
Well, I can't remember whether we had a formal service or not, but they put them in a hammock and put a shell in beside them to weight them down, stitch them up, and then I've no doubt the captain must have given a few words when each one was being buried. I don't honestly remember that. I just remember the awesome factor that having to bury people at sea. I never made it.
So that night you spent a lot of time pulling people out. Did you have any other jobs? Were you involved in...
Oh, no, that was all we had to do. Full-time job. Everyone was at action stations then, so, you know, we weren't anticipating any attacks on the sufferers, so guns weren't involved. All that was involved was the depth charges, being able to adopt depth charges as required, and that was a difficult business.
And were you involved in the dropping of depth charges at all?
That was one of my stations. Again, I couldn't honestly say whether on that night I was on the depth charges, but I mean, it was one of my duties at certain stages to do the depth charges.
And was the Venomous nearby when the Heckler was hit?
Well, we were escorting her. The Heckler and the Marne were escorting her up, along with this cruiser. And as soon as the Heckler was sunk, the cruiser said, "Goodbye, I'm off." Big ship, it was a target. It pushed off to Gibraltar, and we two destroyers were left to do the necessary, pick it up. And actually, one of my colleagues, who's now dead, recently died. I didn't realise at the time that the night we were doing that, on the 11th of November, was his first wedding anniversary. Poor lad.
Yeah, poor lad. And so tell me about the process of launching a depth charge. What would you do? What was your...
Process of what?
Of launching a depth charge.
Well, it fitted onto... that's another good question to remember. It was very... they're mounted on a cradle, so in actual fact, you've always just got to... I really can't remember that now, but you had to... Something triggered it off, propelled it into the water, and it was set for a certain depth so that it would explode at a certain depth, and you had to adjust the setting before it went away.
So you would be told, you would get an order to set it to
particular...
Oh yes,
that's right. There'd be a whole lot of, not one man, it's part of your watch.
And then you'd release something and it would...
Project it into the water, over the down from the stern of the ship, over it went.
And what did it feel like when a depth charge exploded?
You were well aware there was a great explosion that made the ship shatter, etc., and the like.
Okay, so after the Heckler, you took the survivors to Casablanca.
The overnight, just then, and then thereafter were carried on to Gibraltar, which was our place where they were fully discharged, and then we started then escorting convoys up at the North African coast, along to Algiers, Bougie, Bon, etc., where you were attacked during the day by the Stukas coming in at dusk and dawn was the time when they came in, was difficult. I also remember we had Christmas Day in Algiers, and they were attacked there, and that was a very uncomfortable situation because they're alongside the harbour wall, and using your guns alongside is not possible. You just felt very much a sitting target. Nothing actually happened. But perhaps more importantly, I remember I had brown bread and jam from the YMCA on that day, and that really was a treat.
So you hadn't had anything like that?
Oh, no, not at all. Brown bread and jam, Christmas Day.
And when you were being attacked, sort of at dusk and dawn, what would you do? Did you have a particular
station?
We'd be
at the gun station.
And which gun station were you at?
A gun up on the... But of course, what was really more useful than that was people on the Arlequins, etc., which are smaller guns to aim up the way. I wasn't involved in that.
What type of gun was A gun?
Was a 4-inch gun.
And what was the trick? Was there a trick to?
You had your job of loading the shells in and then getting rid of the next cartridge and putting the next one. The routine was well established, and you had experienced sailors who made sure you did it correctly.
And were there things you could do wrong if you were...
Oh yes, I'm sure there are things you could do wrong.
Can you remember what they might be?
I remember being seasick on my first day on the way up to Iceland, and a great effort to make sure you don't have an empty stomach. Keep eating, because being sick with no food in your stomach is a very painful process. Fortunately, I wasn't sick very often, but I think in many respects my first bout of seasickness was more in the mind than in reality, because I was feeling it, and you suffered utter suggestion almost, you're sick.
And was there a trick to, were there any tricks to dealing with seasickness, apart from keep your stomach full?
That, well, mostly in that time. And then if you're sick, try and get to the right side and not sick on the lee side, otherwise you have your sickness blowing back in there. So.
Okay, so so you said then you were running convoy duty up and down the coast. So how?
No, we weren't running convoy. We went to escort the convoy, who was going to take the Lasla supply ship to Russia, and of course we never made that. So we were just steaming up there on our own to join in the force that was going there. We never actually got sufficient contact to do anything. Then we had to come back to Belfast.
Right. So, and when you came, what happened when you came back to Belfast?
Well, that's when we went in. We had the engines were repaired, and I lived like a human being, had baths and things like that. Wonderful.
And what happened next?
Then we were sent off to North Africa. That was our first posting after that.
And what did that involve?
Well, the first exercise was going to escort the Hecla. And then from there we went to Gibraltar and started escorting convoys along the Mediterranean coast and take them along to try and protect them against submarines and air attacks and drop them off at Bougie and Bone and Algiers, wherever they were going to supply for the 8th Army, giving them the supplies.
And Would it just be you, or would there be a number of ships escorting?
Well, there were several ships involved. Yeah.
Can you remember any of the others?
Can't remember any of the others, no.
And what was there a standard formation that you used?
Well, you were like a sheepdog, but you're on the outside protecting them on the inside and keeping them in station and making sure that they stayed in station too. Because you'd agree a speed to travel at, to be a speed commensurate with the slowest speed of the whatever merchant ship was there. Because there's no point in us shooting along if we're leaving them behind.
And what are you looking for when you're on convoy duty?
Well, the anti-submarine people are looking to detect the presence of a submarine in the water. And if they did that, you then probably peel off and try and attack the submarine by throwing depth charges at it. And then resume your station there afterwards, if you lost contact with it. For the air, you were busy watching for planes coming in and trying to fire the lighter guns that then bring them down.
And did you get many submarine contacts?
I would be telling you a lie if I told you I could remember any. We must have had some, but I mean, it's not in my mind.
So was there a lot of chase? There was bits of chasing around, but nothing ever caught.
Yeah.
And were there many planes? Was that more frequent? More aircraft?
Well, every morning and every night you got that. That's what came in. That was short and sharp and sweet. You know, they come zooming in out the sunshine where you couldn't see them so well, and that was the thing.
Did they have a distinctive noise?
Oh yes, you're well aware of what was happening.
Right, what did it sound like?
Oh, I don't know, I suppose your system got used to it then, took it on board, you knew it was time to be on the alert.
And so how long did you do that for?
I did it for 5 months, and then they sent me back to the United Kingdom with a view to progressing on my potential officer status.
And before they sent you back, were there any memorable escort runs in that time? Anything memorable about those runs?
Nothing in particular, no. Just all pretty routine. Before we went back, all I do remember one time from Algiers, when you went ashore, the ship was put at a certain number of hours waiting time to be ready to sail within 4 hours, 8 hours, 2 hours. And I remember one time coming back, they had to accelerate the time for leaving, and I would think half the ship's company that went back on board were drunk, and if we had been torpedoed or anything, they would never have survived. But those that didn't get there in time were left ashore, and the ship had to sail and pick them back the next time they came into Algiers Harbour.
Was there a lot of drinking?
Yeah, a lot of drinking. See, the point was that when you're at sea, the idea to be able to relax when you have a chance to, so you sure go and have a few drinks. And some of the alcohol you had to drink was very wild stuff. It make you react in very different ways. It wasn't like a pint of beer, a full stop.
What sort of, this is alcohol in Algeria? Drinks in Algeria you're thinking of? You said wild, fairly wild stuff.
Yeah, well, the effects were wild anyway, honestly. But I've no great recollection of drinking sufficient to be concerned about it, really, but I could see the effect on others, honestly.
And so when you came, you said you came back to the UK.
Yes.
When would that have been, roughly?
Well, probably about February, I think.
43?
43 it was,
yeah.
Because I came back to a modern school, which was outside Brighton, which was your first sorting out process for 2 weeks. You saw various admiralty boards to assess whether you're fit to carry on. And if you passed that, you then moved on to Lancing College.
And what were they assessing you for? What determined whether you were fit?
Not your ability to be a seaman or a sailor, etc., on the basis that presumably they had reports from the ship's captain as to how you'd performed on board the ship. I have no idea, but one assumes they had some thoughts of that. Anyway, no one had given an adverse report, so they accepted that. And then on to Lancing College for probably about 8 weeks, as you think they are. And that was a very enjoyable time, in as much as we were learning how to be an officer. And we had sports day there, and I remember we were busy training for sports day, and our division managed to win, and our officer bought us a pin of beer to celebrate with, which is very good, you know, these little things sticking in your mind.
And tell me about the other things you learnt while you were there. What else can you remember about that course?
I learned to enjoy spinach.
Enjoy spinach?
Spinach, yes. They used to always say, oh, they've been cutting the grass today. You would have spinach on them, and you're shredded up spinach two or three times a week there. But I hadn't eaten spinach before, but I think I quite like it. Nothing memorable except the nice chapel there where we went to service on a Sunday. Because Lancing College is quite a nice college there, and we had the run of the place. And then again, if you survived that, you moved on to King Alfred, which was the swimming pool in Brighton, and you finished off there. And if you passed that fortnight, you were then accepted as a potential officer, as a temporary acting lieutenant.
And can you tell me what type of things? Were you learning at that stage? I'm just interested in what makes you an officer.
Seamanship, and learn to do navigation, how to use a sextant, and the calculations that would be required of at sea, and things of that nature. And we had a bit of boat handling. We would go down to Port Slade and be involved in handling small boats. That was part of the training as well. That was very pleasurable.
And what sort of, I'm just interested in sort of, because presumably you go up a level so that you learn the very basic things to begin with. So it's the more advanced types of boat handling.
Again, that may be the fact of life, but it doesn't register such to me. It's just the basic period there, and I was so pleased it said to go on. And then I also remember I was commissioned on the 27th of May, 43. So I was never an able-bodied seaman, because you had to be a year to be an able-bodied seaman, and I was one day short of that. So I was an ordinary seaman then as a temporary acting sub-lieutenant.
So you said you went to King Alfred's, and then where did you go from King Alfred's once you'd been commissioned? Where did you go from King Alfred's once you'd been
commissioned?
Once you'd been commissioned?
Well, we went home for a fortnight, and then came back again, and we were gaiters on our legs, etc. Did a bit of parade and running around, and then the first posting I got was to Campbelltown do an anti-submarine course.
What can you remember about that?
Not a lot. Other fact, the name was her attraction to me, but that was it. But, it was a nice base camp.
Can you describe the base for me, or just whatever you remember? But can't remember.
No idea. Then from Campbelltown, where did we? Anti-submarine course. I must have been pushed into my. This is a great exercise in memory, how it fits in. I think after that, we pushed it to Queens Ferry, which was my home, for a minesweeping course. And I think that lasted a week. And then from there, we went off to America to collect a ship there.
How did you get to America?
On either the Mauritania or the Queen Mary. It was joyous living because they stacked up their food in America and you lived like lords there. And the troops were probably fairly overcrowded, but we were not overcrowded as officers. We had shared cabins, certainly, but it was quite comfortable. It took about 4 days to get over, 4.5 days to get to New York.
And when you reached New York, what happened next?
Well, in New York, we were based at the Barbizon Plaza Hotel, which was called the White Ensign Club we had there. And I remember early on losing the toss of a coin and was given a job. But, oh, blow you, my luck. As it turned out, I think it was beneficial because to be all day and all night in New York spending a British serviceman's pay, you would not have survived. So this lost toss of the coin gave me a job down in Pier 90 in the officer controlling officers. And they were moving people around the country to ships, to courses, etc. So I was there, I think, for about 3 months there before I eventually was posted myself. I didn't post myself, but I was posted down to Savannah, Georgia, to join the an American-built, British-American minesweeper called the Magic.
Just before we get onto that, can you remember anything about your job when you're working in the posting area? What would you do?
Well, I was filling up names into pieces of appropriate courses, and you had ships' companies to be put together and sent to various ships. You had obviously a request for so many seamen at different grades, and allocated them and put them out. And that seemed to go quite well. I also remember when I was there, was the first time I ever saw a policeman with a gun in his hand. We used to go to the same restaurant every day for our lunch every day, and one day we were sitting having lunch, and a policeman came in the front door. We were on the restaurant and walked right through another door, wielding his gun. He was obviously looking for someone. Made you realise that you were in New York where guns and policemen went hand in hand.
Very different. So you said then you were posted down to Georgia?
We went down to Savannah, Georgia, to a name was staying in a hotel there, waiting for a ship to be made, and that's where I had the first realisation that staying in a hotel, you went out for breakfast. They didn't supply breakfast, just accommodation. You go along and get your breakfast. And when we were there, before we took possession of the ship, some idiot stole the ship's keys. What they'd want with ship's keys, I have no idea. So that brought the FBI on board, so we're all fingerprinted, etc., to see potential suspects, eliminated. And they had to put new locks on, and then from there, we went up to Charleston, because they knew that the equipment we had on was not adequate, so they had to take it out and amend the ventilating system. Took about 3 weeks up in Charleston, because the people who were building these ships in Savannah were like Charlie Chaplin, Modern Times, thought to do this and do that, had no other thought. They weren't shipbuilders, they'd just been all sorts of trades to make ships. And so from Charleston, we then, our first job was then to sail to Bermuda.
Can you tell me a little bit more about, just give me a bit more of a description of the ship? Tell me a little bit, describe it a little more.
Well, it wasn't as big, it's not as big as a destroyer. I think it was the smallest major war vessel it could be. So in terms of having a watchkeeping ticket, enabled you to go and keep watch on Tavik at Royal or anything else at that, but it never had to, of course. And I remember being mad enough to paint my cabin. I didn't like the colour of it, so I got paint and I painted it myself. I didn't ask anyone else to do it. I painted my cabin. And
so you had your instead of not having a hammock, now you had a cabin.
Oh no, we had bunks then. Oh, that was civilized living, etc. Top bunk and a bottom bunk, and I was in the bottom bunk, so it was quite useful. And I remember going to Bermuda, being confronted with the fact the ferry was going in there, towing an airman behind on a rope, spotted at sea, a dead body. They just put a rope round. Then we got the job when we got there of sending troops down to go and lift the body out, taken away.
Not but, so much fun.
Bermuda was a very pleasant place to be in.
Why was that?
Bermuda.
Why was that?
Why was it? It was civilised. It was, you know. And the life was quite pleasant. One of our fellow officers worked in a dockyard in this country, so he made contact with dockyard workers in Bermuda, and we managed to have a little bit of social life, drinking with friendly company. That was quite pleasant.
And can you tell me how your sort of typical day had changed? Now you've been promoted, what were you doing with your time?
Well, what I was doing with my time then, of course, was in charge of the ship on the bridge, keeping watch, making sure that we steered the correct course and got where we went.
So just describe how you would go about that on a typical watch. When you were in charge,
you go up the bridge and you'd take over from the other officer. He would tell you your position. You'd look at the charts and see where you were, tell you what course you were steering, what the intention was, and that was it. Then you were responsible for keeping an eye on the compass, giving instructions as required to the coxswain down below, to alter course otherwise, and keeping your eye open for anything untoward.
And would you wake the captain? Were there sort of?
Oh, the captain was always there. Anything you had to call the captain. As required.
So what were reasons to call the captain? When would you know that you should do?
If you had to do a change course, for example, you'd call the captain. Later in life, I'll tell you, when I had to change course and I hadn't time to call the captain, and I was very fortunate when the captain came on the bridge that the other ship involved flashed sorry. He had taken the wrong manoeuvre and I had to move ship quickly. I just wonder, would my captain have believed me? But he fortunately read the flashlight, sorry. Mm. And that was at the invasion.